texts 17 through 20 from chapter 5. We just finished a section where Vidura is presenting questions to Maitreya, and strong emphasis has been on Krishna Katha. Krishna Katha, specifically the forms of the Lord and the pastimes of the Lord, but also his devotees and his creation, and the duties of the living entities within creation. Mention was made previously by Vidura that he heard all these things already from Vyas, and he felt satiated in the sense of like he had enough, and was eager to hear even topics on that same general subject, but with a strong emphasis upon Krishna Katha. Maybe you can recall the discussion. It directly relates to what's about to happen this morning. Those portions of the Vedas that were compiled by Vyasadeva that were histories and itihasas and puranas, the two technical terms, were dealing with many subject matters. Specifically, Prabhupada speaks of, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was speaking of activities of lust and activities of greed. Now, why would a transcendentalist like Vyas write on topics like activities of lust and activities of greed? There's enough of that already. You don't need to create literature like that. But he did so understanding the mind of worldly people. What to speak of today's advanced stage of Kali Yuga, just even at that time. Of course, he was writing for the people of the age of Kali. So those subject matters, while attractive to the contaminated mind and sensibilities of worldly people, the intention was to draw them through those topics into the region of transcendence. And in the region of transcendence, becoming detached further and further from worldly pleasures and topics related to worldly pleasures. So we're going to hear a little bit of that. Say the contrast between Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam. How Mahabharata treats these topics one way and how Srimad Bhagavatam treats them, same topics, in a very different way. And therefore a different result. Very directly attracting the audience of Srimad Bhagavatam to the transcendental attraction for Krishna. Very strongly and quickly and directly. Okay, so that's the note that Vidura ends. And now Shukadev Goswami, who's narrating all of this to Maharaj Parikshit, says, the great sage Maitreya Muni, he heard the questions. After honoring Vidura very greatly, he began to speak at Vidura's request, for the greatest welfare of all people. We discussed yesterday, who even thinks of the greatest welfare? I mean, who has the capacity to think of the greatest welfare? That's another thing. Remember one of my god sisters described that she asked Srila Prabhupada once, when chanting Krishna's holy name, should we be thinking, Srila Prabhupada, that When we're chanting Krishna's holy name, this holy name has the capacity to deliver the highest good to all living beings. Should we be thinking like that? She thought she'd get a very positive answer. Instead, she got the answer. Prabhupada said, how can you possibly think of all living beings? What to speak of their welfare? You should just listen to the holy name. Oh, okay. But Maitreya is appreciating that Vidura has that capacity. In fact, that was his intent. His intent was not just for his own deliverance, it was for the benefit of Maitreya and the benefit of all people who might later hear that conversation. Something very much like Maharaj Pariksit's question to Shukadev Goswami, where he's asking, what's the all-around good for all living entities who are about to die? So in Prabhupada explains that means everybody's about to die. He knew he had 7 days. We don't know we have 7 moments. So his concern was for his citizens, not just for himself. Anyway, so very elevated souls can think like that. And Maitreya is appreciating, you are such an elevated soul that you're thinking like that. And not just what's good for people, but the ultimate good. There's these terms, Shreya and Preya, or Shreyas and Preyas. And the term that's used here is Nishreyasya, the ultimate good. And a similar term is used in the first canto, Pavarga and Apavarga. And the statement made by Suta Goswami is that the activities of living beings should be made for the ultimate good. Apavarga. And the statement of the purport, short purport, but Prabhupada is saying, this is devotional service. Devotional service is the ultimate good for the living being. The all-inclusive welfare service for the entire human society is devotional service to the Lord. And as requested by Vidura, the sage described the same very appropriately. So we're devotees, so we understand these things, that what he's referring to is devotional service, but Prabhupada is stating it explicitly for his readership, whoever may in the future read his books. So Sri Maitreya replies, O Vidura, all glory unto you. You have inquired from me of the greatest of all goodness, and thus you have shown your mercy on both to the world and to me, because your mind is always absorbed in thoughts of transcendence. So his humble spirit is being exhibited. Vidura is asking questions, and Maitreya is saying, you're doing this for my benefit and for the benefit of the world. You're asking questions not for the benefit of yourself. You're asking questions to benefit me, the speaker. Thank you. And the world in general. This is your nature, but it's not surprising that you're asking in this way because your mind is completely absorbed in transcendence. Prabhupada writes, Maitreya Muni, who was experienced in the science of transcendence, could understand that Vidura's mind is fully absorbed in transcendence, or it takes one to know one. Adhokshaja means, what does adhokshaja mean?
Beyond the senses.
Beyond the senses. Adhokshaja means that which transcends the limits of sense perception or sensual experience. The Lord is transcendental to our sense experience, but He reveals Himself to the sincere devotee. Because Vidura was always absorbed in thought of the Lord, Maitreya could estimate Vidura's transcendental value. He could estimate it. I mean, how do you measure something that has no limit? But you can get an idea. You can estimate. So he, being a transcendentalist himself, he can understand Vidura's nature and Vidura's capacity, and that fact that his mind is absorbed in transcendence, and that's why he's asking the questions in the way that he's asking. And he's thanking him for that. Text 19, O Vidura, it is not at all wonderful that you have so accepted the Lord without deviation of thought, for you were born from the semen of Vyasadeva. In the purport, Prabhupada is speaking of the way, the cultural means by which good children are produced. And the asset of qualified parents who qualify themselves by Vedic culture, specifically references made to Garbhadang Sanskara, the Vedic ritual, is very important for generating good population. There's a buzz in the media today of the rapidly increasing population of both China and India, the younger generation producing children at a rate that's no longer an asset. They're calling it a time bomb. And so the government, the Indian government presently, is encouraging young couples to not produce children. And they're giving them financial incentives to not produce children because they recognize they're not going to be able to sustain this population at the present rate of growth, population growth. So it's going to be a huge problem for the government. Later on, it's going to be a huge problem for the people too. Not enough, they're already predicting not enough water. I mean, Gopal Krishnaraj was describing this to us recently. Huge problem. Not enough water. Of course, they're flooding in Pakistan, but there's not enough water in India. And food shortages. Part of the food shortage problem is the prosperity of the population. They calculate, this is just like mundane statistics, but people used to eat one large rice meal a day and now it's two. So it's like, you know, doubling the population because now they have the means to eat two big rice meals a day. So they don't have the rice presently. What to speak of the population growth. So the government is paying young couples, don't produce children, at least for some years. Slow the whole rate down. But Prabhupada is writing, the problem is not to check the growth of the population, but to generate good population on the level of Vidura, Vyasa, and Maitreya. He says it again. There is no need to check the growth of population if the children are born as human beings with all precautions regarding their birth. So-called birth control is not only vicious, but also useless. So Prabhupada wouldn't like our present government's plan of giving money to couples to not produce children. Why the government can't give money to help educate people how to produce God-conscious children on the level of Vidura, Maitreya, and Vyas? Well, that would be secularism. Excuse me, that would be, you know, promoting religion in a secular government. We can't do that. So they don't. So they have a problem that can't be managed. For devotees, we have the solution, and we should appropriately apply the solution. In the case of, we may not be Vyasadevas. We're not Vyasadevas. But the same principle applies. Vyasadeva, by producing the child, Vidura, just by that parentage, it's not a guarantee, but it's described in the purport in this language that it gives great facility for Vidura to become elevated. The next verse, text 20, Maitreya says, I know that you are now Vidura due to the cursing of Mandavya Muni, and that formerly you were King Yamaraj, the great controller of living entities. After their death, you were begotten by the son of Satyavati Vyasadeva in the kept wife of his brother. When I read these things, you know, I always get, I can't follow. The wife of his brother, and it gets like, you know, the nephew and the niece and the uncle and the great second generation. I spin out. I can't sort it all out. But that's just an oblique reference that's made here. It's just following the point that Vidura is a very elevated soul. He's elevated because he was the son of Vyas. And so by that parentage, he's certainly going to be an elevated soul. And the inside scoop is he's actually Yamaraj, who was cursed by... Now here it's Mandavya Muni, and those that are familiar with the first canto, chapter 13, it's right there in the first verse, it's Manduka Muni. So Manduka Muni, Mandavya Muni, referred to in a different way, but same person, same event. You know that description? Manduka Muni was to die. There was the description goes like this. There was a group of robbers and dacoits, and they became out of control, so much wild and ruthless that the local village became determined they were going to stop these people. So they gathered together a group of armed, deputized persons to capture them. And so they started chasing them. And as they were chasing them, they went up into a mountain. As they went up into a mountain, they found a cottage in the mountain. They hid inside the cottage. And the deputized group surrounded the cottage. Okay, come out with your hands up. Got you surrounded. So they then entered the cottage. And when they entered the cottage, they saw Mandavya Muni, and they thought Mandavya Muni was one of the robbers. That was their hangout. So they were all arrested, and they were given a death sentence. And so here's Manduka Muni on a with a death sentence. That there's a particular punishment. Prabhupada described it in detail in a lecture. Where sounds horrible. Sorry to say, but they take a sword, and then the sword is pierced through the backside of somebody and through their rectum and pierced their body and kill them. And that was the method of killing the person, their death penalty. So somebody in the crowd, because it would be done in public, so you know, it's the message is, don't mess like this because you'll also be punished in a similar manner. So there's a big assembly of people. The robbers were all on a raised platform ready to have their execution performed. And somebody in the crowd recognized, that's Manduka Muni. That's not a robber. And so the messenger went to the king, and the king was told, you're about to have a great sage killed. The king came at once, profusely apologized to the sage. Immediately the sage gave his forgiveness, said, this is okay. I understand it was just an accident. You're forgiven. But immediately he went to Yamaraj and requested Yamaraj for an explanation. There's a good lesson in that. When something happens, rather than just like, why did you do this? Accusing. He asked him, could you offer an explanation? There's always two sides to every story, right? There's always two sides, at least two sides to every story. So he requested an explanation. And Yamaraj said, well, when you were a small boy, you were piercing ants with a sharpened straw. And by killing them in that way, you're now having to die by this method, by having your body also pierced by a sword. And Mandavya Muni or Manduka Muni said, that may have happened, but when a child is very, very small, their childish activity is not punishable like for an adult. That's also part of Vedic culture, Vedic code. So you're arranging for my death in this way shows you don't understand Dharma properly. And one who doesn't understand Dharma properly but presents himself as one who is the upholder of Dharma, you're doing a great disservice. This is the mentality of a Sudra. I curse you, you become a Sudra. So Yamaraj got a little break from the thankless task of punishing people for all their sinful deeds and got to become the son of a Shudra. Fortunately, the father was Vyasadeva. So although the mother was a Shudra and therefore by caste his position was also that of a Shudra, this is also discussed that in Vedic culture whatever is the caste of the mother becomes the caste of the son. And so Vidura became a member of the royal family by honor but in a position not to hold a title of king or Kshatriya, because his caste was Shudra. And it was that very same birth that was the object of scorn of Duryodhana when he viciously criticized Vidura in the public assembly. In the purport, Prabhupada briefly discusses what is elaborately presented in Mahabharata. So I'm going to take you on a Mahabharata journey this morning. And as I do, you can bear in mind what we heard from the other day, how these narrations, they're about greedy and lusty affairs of contaminated people, but although the subject matter is like that, it carries one gradually to the position of the personality of Godhead comes into the picture. That's the nature of these narrations. So one of the narrations goes back to the eight Vasus. We're going to describe something about Bhishma Dev. When Bhishma Dev had to fight Parashuram, an incarnation of the Lord, was unable to defeat Bhishma Dev. And the answer, the explanation that was given by a voice from the sky some 30 days after the battle began and Parashuram was unable to be defeated. A voice came telling Parashuram, you're not going to be able to defeat him because he's one of the eight Vasus. So the eight Vasus in a previous period of time went to visit the sage Vasishta. And when they went to visit the sage Vasishta, they saw the Mahabharata describes it as a heavenly cow, Kamadenu, a wish-fulfilling cow that could fulfill all desires. The wife of the chief of the eight Vasus, she wanted the cow. So she induced her husband, whose name was, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, D-Y-A-U, Diao, something like that. Get the cow and take it back to our place. I want the cow. So a plot was made to kidnap the cow when Vasishta wasn't looking. But Vasishta's not an ordinary personality. He was fully conscious of what their plot was and what happened. So when he saw that the cow was in fact stolen, he uttered a curse. And the curse was that these Vasus, for this heinous act of stealing the property of a Brahmana, would fall from the heavenly realm and take birth in the material world, the earthly realm. So the Vasus were then informed that this curse was uttered by Vasishta. So they brought the cow back and they pleaded for forgiveness. Vasishta said, it's too late. What has been uttered by a Brahmana can't be taken back. But they kept persisting, please, please do something to minimize this problem. What can be done? So he finally relented and said, I can't take the curse back. You'll all have to fall. But you can choose what family you will be born in. And all of you, at least seven of you, will very quickly be reinstated after your birth into the heavenly realm. But you, Diao, you will have to stay for a full lifetime in the mortal realm. So the Vasus were lamenting. And as they were lamenting, Ganga personified came and saw them in this very unhappy state, asking, why do you look so morose? And they told their story, that they would have to take birth on earth, lose their heavenly status. They asked Mother Ganga, would you be kind enough to become our mother? Would you descend to the earthly realm and assist us in this way so we won't have to take birth from a worldly personality, but we can become your sons? So Ganga then narrated to them, there's a situation that has come upon me also, where there was one king whose name was Pratipa Maharaj, was a very, very pious king, so pious that in his next life he became situated on Indra's planet. He was amongst the association of King Indra. And one day, I was also attending a function at Indra Loka, and this king, Mahavisha, was in that assembly, and a breeze came, and my dress was blown into the air, and everyone of good culture looked the other way, except this king recently attaining the heavenly realm. He couldn't take his eyes off of my form. And Brahma saw this, and Brahma cursed him. This is not the behavior of a resident of heaven. I curse you, you will fall into the material, the mortal realm again. back down. So that very same king would become the son of this Pratipa. Actually, I've said it incorrectly. This Mahavisha is the king who attained the heavenly realm. Mahavisha is the one that was attracted to Ganga. Mahavisha chose to take birth as the son of Pratipa, who was Santanu's father. So Santanu, she said, will become my husband. And I will descend on earth after Santanu is born, and you will become my sons, O eight Vasus. So some time passed. Santanu was born as the son of Pratipa, formerly Santanu being this king who attained the heavenly realm but was cursed by Lord Brahma to take birth again in the earthly realm. And as he was traveling by the side of a river, by the side of the Ganga, he saw a beautiful celestial woman, Ganga. And he became very attracted. And he approached her and said, whoever you are, you may be an apsara, you may be a demigoddess, you may be whoever you may be, I'm requesting that you become my wife. Please accept my request. And her reply was, very well, I'll become your wife, your faithful, obedient, chaste wife, on one condition, that whatever actions I perform, you'll never question them, never challenge me, and allow me to act freely. On those conditions, I'll become your wife and your queen. But if you deviate from that, then immediately I'm going to go from the place. If you accept on that condition, I will become your queen. So Santanu, not thinking clearly, immediately said, yes, whatever you say. It sounds very reasonable. And he went with Ganga back to the palace, and that very same day they were married. And in the course of 8 years, the enjoyment of Santanu and Ganga went on, and one son was born each year. And some number of days after each of the first 7 sons were born, Ganga took the child, went to the river, and placed the child in the river. The child drowned, died, and went back to the heavenly kingdom, just as was promised by Vasishtha would happen. When the 8th son was born, Santanu lost it. What are you doing? You're a child killer. What kind of religious principle is this? You'll go to hell and we'll all go to hell for this horrible activity. How can you do this? I told you that you would never, if you ever objected to any of my activities, I would leave you at once, and now I'm ready to leave. But she then disclosed the whole situation to him. These are actually the Vasus. And this one child that is going to be now spared, you've asked, he'll be spared. He is the chief one that stole Vasishtha's cow. So he will remain with you on earth for the full duration of one full lifetime. So I'm going to go now. But at least you know the story here. So he then requested her, please take the child with you to the heavenly realm. Have the child trained there in a proper way, fitting his position. And after some time, you can please bring him back, and he can then continue his life as my son. So she agreed very well. And she took later to become Bhishma Dev, for training under Vasishtha and Parashuram and other great sages. So one day, so many years later, Santanu was in the forest hunting, and he was by the side of the river that was flowing very swiftly, and all of a sudden he saw that it was barely a trickle. And he was very surprised, so he went to see what was the cause, and he saw a young boy with arrows pierced into the river vertically, so many that it was causing a dam and stopping the water to flow. And so he thought, maybe this is my son. So he called out for Ganga, please indicate, who is my son? And she appeared and verified, this is your son. He's been duly trained now. So he will live the rest of his life with you. So that was Bhishma Dev, the first son of Santanu. But then Santanu is now without a queen because Ganga left. And so naturally the king wanted to have a queen. So an arrangement was made by divine providence that a wife would be had by him by a great vow made by his own son Bhishma Dev. And that narration goes as follows. There was one fisherman whose name I can't remember right now. Anyone know the fisherman's name? Satyavati was his daughter. What's the fisherman's name? Anyway, a fisherman wanted very much for his daughter to earn pious credits in her life by taking saintly people across the river. Nearby where they were living, there was a boat crossing. So he gave her the assignment of taking charge of one of the boats that would take people across the river, and by doing that service, she would get pious merit, and especially maybe one saintly person would give her special benediction for that service. So one day, Parashramuni, the father of Vyas, later to become father of Vyas, got in her boat. And as he got in her boat, he was doing his astrological calculations. And he was looking at the astrological calculation and concluded that at this very time period, this very moment, it's such an auspicious configuration of the planets that an incarnation of the personality of Godhead is to be born right in this particular place. So he requested, while crossing the river, that Satyavati become the mother and he would be the father of that incarnation of the Lord. And she said, my dear sage, this is not proper. We're not married. How can I bear a child by you? I said, don't worry. This is a very special arrangement. You will not lose your virginity. She said, well, we're right in the middle of the river, and everyone will see. He said, don't worry. By my mystic power, I'll create an island. And in fact, I'll create an island in such a way that it's mystical. No one can even see. Therefore, it's Krishna Dvipa, because he was born on an island. Krishna Dvaipayana Vyas. He said, well, during pregnancy, I'll be walking around with carrying a child, and everyone will understand, you know, how did this happen, Satyavati? You're not even married. He said, don't worry. Shortly after the pregnancy occurs, the child will be born, and he'll be born in a full, mature adult form. So you won't have to do it even caring for a small child. So she said, you're a great sage. I accept what you're suggesting. So Satyavati became the mother of Vyas. And after Vyas was born, just as Parashramuni said, he would be of a full adult stature. So he came before his mother with folded hands and said, "My dear mother, I must go now. But at any time that you wish, just call my name, and at once I'll come. And whatever it is that you request of me, I'll be happy to serve you." And off he went. That was it. Satyavati and Vyas. So Vyasadeva, this becomes important later, Vyasadeva was the first son of Satyavati, which nobody knew except Parashramuni and Satyavati. It was a secret, except now we know, because it's in Mahabharata. And Vidura knew because he had met Vyas, and Vyas disclosed all these things to him. But otherwise, nobody knew. So after some, and before Vyas left, he gave Satyavati two benedictions. Two benedictions. One was that she would be very beautiful and very fragrant. The fragrance of her body would like that of the most elegant of fragrances, because being around fish and fishermen doesn't make for a nice smell. But so she was given this benediction. You'll be very, very beautiful, and the fragrance of your body will go for miles in all directions. Very attractive. And that you'll become the mother of a king. I give you this benediction for this assisting. Might have been Parashramuni that gave that benediction. So Satyavati went back and told her father, "Dad, guess what happened today? You won't believe it. Pretty amazing." And as she narrated to her father what happened, he was very pleased. "Just as I had wished, you would get the benediction of some great sage. Just see, I've accepted your words. See your beauty and this, the fragrance. It's all true. So that means you'll become the father of a king. This is very wonderful. So continue in this way with your service. Let us see what providence has planned." So some time passed, and Maharaj Santanu, the father of Bhishma Dev, now without a queen, was crossing the same river. He got in the same boat with Satyavati, and he became very attracted to the beauty of Satyavati. And he inquired who is the father of Satyavati, so he went to the father of Satyavati and requested the father that, "I'd like to marry your daughter, my dear fisherman. I'm the king of all the land. Please give the hand of your daughter in marriage." One would think, wow, great. But the fisherman said, "No." "How come?" "Because my daughter is to have as a son a king, and you already have a firstborn son. So your son will become king. So you can't marry my daughter." So Santanu went back to the palace, feeling the blues. "Oh, I want to marry Satyavati, but I can't marry Satyavati." So he became very remorseful or very unhappy, sad, and unable practically to carry out his duties as a king. Everybody in the palace could understand. Something is disturbing his mind. So his son inquired to find out what was causing his father's trouble. And it came to his knowledge that the reason was his father wanted to marry Satyavati. So he thought he would go to Satyavati's father and plead on Santanu's behalf. He got the same answer: "No. Why not? He's the king." He said, "Because my daughter is to have as her son a king, and you're already the son of Santanu." So he said, I'll make a promise. I'll not become king. He said, that's not good enough. Because you may not become king, but if you marry and have a son, then your son will become king. Okay, I will not marry. So the fisherman said, all right, my daughter can marry your father. So Satyavati married Santanu. And when Santanu came to understand what a vow Bhishma Dev has taken for my sake, he uttered this benediction that, my dear son, you've taken such a great vow for my own gratification of my senses. I give you this benediction that you will not have to die unless you so choose. So he was very powerful. Just by his uttering, it became a fact. He was protected by that pledge of his father. So after some time, two sons were born of Satyavati and Santanu. And the elder of those sons was Chitrangada, and the younger of the two brothers was Vichitravirya. So Bhishma Dev, being the by far elder brother of the two, he made arrangements for the marriage, for the wives of Chitrangada and Vichitravirya. And it becomes this very complex story, isn't it? Chitrangada was married, but after Chitrangada was married, there was, and became king, there was a Gandharva of the same name, Chitrangada. And Chitrangada the Gandharva was really puffed up. He said, forget it, I'm not going to live on the same universe with another person of the same name, Chitrangada. So he came and challenged him to a fight and said, may the better man win. There will only be one Chitrangada when we're finished. So the Gandharva defeated Santanu's son. So one son gone, one son remaining, Vichitravirya. Bhishma Dev made an arrangement for wives for Vichitravirya. And there was a king in the southern area of India. Forget the province. But there were three daughters, three princesses. Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. And of the three, one of them had already given her heart to, who was it, Shalva? Who? Shalva? Shalva? So when Vichitravirya, when Bhishma Dev, powerful hero Bhishma Dev, went to the Swayamvar, everybody stood back and said, okay, I guess, we'll let him take these three princesses as his wife. But he had no intention of taking them as his wife. He was going to bring them back to the capital city for becoming wives of Vichitravirya. And two of them, Ambika and Ambalika, were fine with that, but Amba was not at all fine with that. She said, I'm sorry, I can't marry Vichitravirya because I've already given my heart to Shalva. So Bhishma said, very well, you can go back and you can marry Shalva. That's fine with me. But when she went to let her heart's desire be known by Shalva, he said, no, we can't marry. You've already given your heart to someone. You've given your heart to me, but you've been touched by Bhishma. I can't marry you. So then she went to Bhishma saying, well, then you have to marry me. He said, I've taken a vow to not marry. I can't marry you. So she was, she can't marry here, she can't marry there, and she can't marry there. So she decided she would just give up her life in the performance of austerities. It's a long story. The short of the story was she got this benediction from Lord Shiva that she could die and in her next life be born as the person who would kill Bhishma. Long story. Won't go there. Long story. So, Amba had this get back at Bhishma Dev thing going on. Ambika and Ambalika became the wives of Vichitravirya. But as fate would have it, before there were children born of Ambika and Ambalika, Vichitravirya also died untimely. So this was a big problem, because the succession of the lineage of kings was needed by there being sons. And the two wives, Ambika and Ambalika, were so deeply dedicated to their husband, Vichitravirya, that when his funeral time came, they wanted to enter into the fire. And Satyavati tried to persuade them, please don't do this, because it's service to your husband and my son that you produce sons. You must do this. He said, no, how can we produce sons? Our father is gone. Our husband is gone. He said, well, there's a procedure in Vedic culture where if a brother cannot produce children, then another brother can produce children within the womb of the wife. Or if the husband cannot produce children, the brother of the husband can produce children in the womb of the wife. Because Vichitravirya is gone, then his brother, so they only knew of one brother, Bhishma Dev. So, very reluctantly, they agreed for the sake of the royal family. So now all Satyavati had to do was convince Bhishma Dev to perform that service. Bhishma Dev said, no way. I can't perform that service. I've taken a vow. I will not marry and I will not have children. I've taken a vow. You can't mother. You ask me anything, but not breaking religious principle. Oh, this is a higher principle than that principle. Because the royal family, no, mother, I can't do that. But there is a solution. What's that solution? You have another son. Vyasadeva was your son before I was born. And Vyasadeva can become the father of the children of Ambika and Ambalika. So she then remembered, yes, it's true. Vyasadeva said, if any time I need some service from him, I just call his name. So she called his name, and he came at once. But he was in the midst of very severe austerities. And so his body was unclean, and his hair was disheveled, and he looked like a monster. My dear mother, some service for me, yes? She explained the situation and said, my dear mother, the timing isn't very good. After I finish my austerity and I can have a proper bath and come in a prison. No. Who knows what may happen? Whoever thought that Santanu would die, then Vichitravirya would die, and Chitrangada would die, who knows what's next? Should happen immediately. It's against my advice, my dear mother, but if you say. So the three sons were produced, one by one, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura. And Vidura was the son of the maid servant of Ambika. It was a trick. Ambika didn't want to have that experience a second time. So she sent instead her maidservant assistant. The maidservant assistant was not at all afraid of Vyas, and Vidura was born of the maidservant. So in this way, Vidura was actually Yamaraj cursed by Manduka Muni to become the son of a maidservant or become a Shudrani. But his elevated stature of his mind being always absorbed in transcendence was natural out of these two principles, the parentage and his previous life. So Maitreya is disclosing all of this. Because of these two elements, it's not at all a surprise, my dear Vidura, that your situation is at what it is. You are concerned about the welfare of all. You're concerned about the welfare of me. Your mind is absorbed in transcendence because you have all of this merit standing behind you. Now what about us? We don't have merit standing behind us. We have the opposite. Duskriti. or some mix. And because of that, the ease or the facility of becoming good instruments in the hand of Krishna may be diminished. But the good news is the process of hearing Krishna Katha, just as has been described, it creates that auspiciousness and it destroys all inauspiciousness. It's most powerful. So what to speak of hearing the dialogue between these two personalities, Maitreya and Vidura. This mystery, this mysterious history of Vidura was known to Maitreya Muni because he happened to be a contemporary friend of Vyasadeva's. In spite of Vidura's birth from the womb of a kept wife, because he had otherwise high parentage and great connection, he inherited the highest talent of becoming a great devotee of the Lord. To take his birth in such a family is understood to be an advantage for attaining devotional service. Vidura was given the chance due to his previous greatness. So we have some service to do also. Particularly as grihasthas, you have a service to do to become meritorious by proper application to the hearing of Krishna Katha and rendering service unto the great souls, the Bhagavatas, hearing the book Bhagavata and rendering service to the person, Bhagavata, and by so doing, becoming meritorious. And then, in turn, passing that merit on to your children. Prabhupada said, on more than one occasion, the strength of our Krishna consciousness movement will not so much be known by the present generation, nor by our children, but by our children's children. So, meaning to take impious souls and make them pious, those now pious souls becoming parents of children, and those children living, growing up in a life of Krishna consciousness, and to such a degree that as adults they're imbibing the spirit and the teachings fully of their parents, and then producing children, those children will be of great quality. Of course, there's three generations of having to have great merit from the opposite. But that's the formula that Srila Prabhupada gave for how the whole world can become impacted by the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and the message of pure devotional service. So what's being promised here, because of Vidura's request, is Maitreya is going to speak about devotional service, pure devotional service, and he's going to specifically speak about the process of creation. As we heard yesterday, the position of the Purusha avatars, those forms of the Lord specifically for the purpose of creation, and what do they do? So that's one of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam, Sarga, the creation of the Lord, followed by what's also going to appear in this third canto, Visarga, the sub-creation by Lord Brahma. It's going to be unfolded by Shukadev Goswami and Maitreya. Okay. It's a little Mahabharat excursion connected to Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so any comments or questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.